wasn't relevant right then. This way. Meg veered up the steepest hill she could find, just to annoy me. I was forced to stand as I pedaled, pushing with all my weight to make progress against the incline. At the summit, more bad news. In front of us, arrayed across the higher hills, troops marched doggedly toward Camp Jupiter. There were squads of Blemyai, Pandai, and even some six-armed Earthborn who had served Gaia in the recent unpleasantness. All fighting their way through flaming trenches, staked barricades, and Roman skirmishers trying to put my archery lessons to good use. In the early evening gloom, I could only see bits and pieces of the battle. Judging from the mass of glittering armor and the forest of battle pennants, the main part of the Emperor's army was concentrated on Highway 24, forcing its way toward the Caldecott Tunnel. Enemy catapults hurled projectiles toward the Legion's positions, but most disappeared in bursts of purple light as soon as they got close. I assumed that was the work of Terminus, doing his part to defend the camp's borders. Meanwhile, at the base of the tunnel, flashes of lightning pinpointed the location of the Legion's standard. Tendrils of electricity zigzagged down the hillsides, arcing through enemy lines and frying them to dust. Camp Jupiter's ballistae launched giant flaming spears at the invaders, breaking through their lines and starting more forest fires. The Emperor's troops kept coming. The ones making the best progress were huddled behind large armored vehicles that crawled on eight legs and... oh, gods. My guts felt like they'd gotten tangled in my bike chain. Those weren't vehicles. "Myrmecas," I said. "Meg! Those are mer... I see them." She didn't even slow down. "It doesn't change anything. Come on." How could it not change anything? We'd faced a nest of those giant ants at Camp Half-Blood and barely survived. Meg had nearly been pulped into Gerber's larvae puree. Now we were confronting Myrmecas trained for war, snapping trees in half with their pincers, and spraying acid to melt through the camp's defensive pickets. This was a brand new flavor of horrible. "We'll never get through their lines," I protested. "Lavinia's secret tunnel. It collapsed. Not that tunnel, a different secret tunnel." "How many does she have?"
"Dunno.
A lot? Come on." With that rousing oratory complete, Meg pedaled onward. I followed, having nothing better to do. She led me up a dead-end street to a generator station at the base of an electrical tower. The area was ringed in barbed wire fencing, but the gate stood wide open. If Meg had told me to climb the tower, I would have given up and made my peace with zombie eternity. Instead, she pointed to the side of the generator, where metal doors were set into the concrete, like the entrance to a storm cellar or a bomb shelter.
"Hold my bike," she said.
She jumped off and summoned one of her swords. With a single strike, she slashed through the padlocked chains, then pulled open the doors, revealing a dark shaft slanting downward at a precarious angle.
"Perfect," she said. "It's big enough to ride through."
"What?" She hopped back on her go-glow and plunged into the tunnel, the click, click, click of her bike chain echoing off the concrete walls.
"You have a very broad definition of perfect," I muttered.
Then I coasted in after her. Much to my surprise, in the total darkness of the tunnel, the go-glow bike actually, well, glowed. I suppose I should have expected that. Ahead of me, I could see the faint, fuzzy apparition of Meg's neon war machine. When I looked down, the yellow aura of my own bike was almost blinding. It did little to help me navigate down the steep shaft, but it would make me a much easier target for enemies to pick out in the gloom. Hooray! Against all odds, I did not wipe out and break my neck. The tunnel leveled, then began to climb again. I wondered who had excavated this passageway, and why they hadn't installed a convenient lift system, so I didn't have to expend so much energy pedaling. Somewhere overhead, an explosion shook the tunnel, which was excellent motivation to keep moving. After a bit more sweating and gasping, I realized I could discern a dim square of light ahead of us, an exit covered in branches. Meg burst straight through it. I wobbled after her, emerging in a landscape lit by fire and lightning and ringing with the sounds of chaos. We had arrived in the middle of the war zone. I will give you free advice. If you plan to pop into a battle, the place you do not want to be is in the middle of it. I recommend the very back, where the general often has a comfortable tent with hors d'oeuvres and beverages. But the middle? No, always bad, especially if you arrive on canary yellow glow-in-the-dark bikes. As soon as Meg and I emerged, we were spotted by a dozen large humanoids covered in shaggy blonde hair. They pointed at us and began to scream. Cro-Mandy? Wow. I hadn't seen any of their kind since Dionysus's drunken invasion of India back in the BCE. Their species has gorgeous gray eyes, but that's about the only flattering thing I can say about them. Their dirty, shaggy blonde pelts make them look like Muppets who have been used as dust rags. Their dog-like teeth clearly never get a proper flossing. They are strong, aggressive, and can only communicate in ear-splitting shrieks. I once asked Ares and Aphrodite if the Cro-Mandi were their secret love children from their long-standing affair, because they were such a perfect mix of the two Olympians. Ares and Aphrodite did not find that funny. Meg, like any reasonable child when confronted with a dozen hairy giants, hopped off her bike, summoned her swords, and charged. I yelped in alarm and drew my bow. I was low on arrows after playing catch with the ravens, but I managed to slay 6 of the Cro-Mandi before Meg reached them. Despite how exhausted she must have been, she handily dispatched the remaining 6 with a blur of her golden blades. I laughed, actually laughed with satisfaction. It felt so good to be a decent archer again, and to watch Meg at her swordplay. What a team we made! That's one of the dangers of being in a battle, along with getting killed. When things are going well, you tend to get tunnel vision. You zero in on your little area and forget the big picture. As Meg gave the last Cro-Manda a haircut straight through the chest, I allowed myself to think that we were winning. Then I scanned our surroundings, and I realized we were surrounded by a whole lot of not winning. Gargantuan ants trampled their way toward us, spewing acid to clear the hillside of skirmishers. Several steaming bodies in Roman armor sprawled in the underbrush, and I did not want to think about who they might have been or how they had died. Pandai in black Kevlar and helmets, almost invisible in the dusk, glided around on their huge parasail ears, dropping onto any unsuspecting demigod they could find. Higher up, giant eagles fought with giant ravens, their wingtips glinting in the blood-red moonlight. Just 100 yards to my left, wolf-headed cynocephali howled as they bounded into battle, crashing into the shields of the nearest cohort. The third, which looked small and alone and critically undermanned in a sea of bad guys. That was only on our hill. I could see fires burning across the whole western front along the valley's borders. maybe half a mile of patchwork battles. Ballistae launched glowing spears from the summits. Catapults hurled boulders that shattered on impact, spraying shards of imperial gold into the enemy lines. Flaming logs, always a fun Roman party game, rolled down the hillsides, smashing through packs of earthborn. For all the legion's efforts, the enemy kept advancing. On the empty eastbound lanes of Highway 24, the Emperor's main columns marched toward the Caldecott Tunnel, their gold and purple banners raised high. Roman colors. Roman emperors bent on destroying the last true Roman legion. This was how it ended, I thought bitterly. Not fighting threats from the outside, but fighting against the ugliest side of our own history.
Testudo!
A centurion shout brought my attention back to the third cohort. They were struggling to form a protective turtle formation with their shields as the cynocephali swarmed over them in a snarling wave of fur and claws.
Meg!
I yelled, pointing to the imperiled cohort. She ran toward them, me at her heels. As we closed in, I scooped up an abandoned quiver from the ground, trying not to think about why it had been dropped there, and sent a fresh volley of arrows into the pack. Six fell dead, seven, eight, but there were still too many. Meg screamed in fury and launched herself at the nearest wolf-headed men. She was quickly surrounded, but our advance had distracted the pack, giving the third cohort a few precious seconds to regroup.
Offense Romulus!
Shouted the centurion. If you have ever seen a pill bug uncurl, revealing its hundreds of legs, you can imagine what the third cohort looked like as it broke Testudo and formed a bristling forest of spears, skewering the cynocephali. I was so impressed I almost got my face chewed off by a stray charging wolfman. Just before it reached me, Centurion Larry hurled his javelin. The monster fell at my feet, impaled in the middle of his incredibly unmanscaped back.
You made it! Larry grinned at us. Where's Reyna?
She's okay, I said. She's alive.
Cool. Frank wants to see you. ASAP.
Meg stumbled to my side, breathing hard, her swords glistening with monster goo.
Hey, Larry. How's it going?
Terrible!
Larry sounded delighted.
Carl, Reza, escort these two to Praetor Zhang immediately.
Yes, sir!
Our escorts hustled us off toward the Caldecott Tunnel, while behind us, Larry called his troops back to action.
Come on, Legionnaires! We've drilled for this! We've got this!
After a few more terrible minutes of dodging pandai, jumping fiery craters, and skirting mobs of monsters, Carl and Reza brought us safely to Frank Zhang's command post at the mouth of the Caldecott Tunnel. Much to my disappointment, there were no hors d'oeuvres or beverages. There wasn't even a tent, just a bunch of stressed-out Romans in full battle gear, rushing around, carrying orders and shoring up defenses. Above us, on the concrete terrace that stretched over the tunnel's mouth, Jacob the Standard-Bearer stood with the Legion's eagle and a couple of spotters, keeping watch on all the approaches. Whenever an enemy got too close, Jacob would zap them like the Oprah Winfrey version of Jupiter. And you get a lightning bolt, and you get a lightning bolt. Unfortunately, he'd been using the eagle so much that it was beginning to smoke. Even super powerful magic items have their limits. The Legion standard was close to total overload. When Frank Zhang saw us, a whole G of weight seemed to lift from his shoulders.
Thank the gods. Apollo, your face looks terrible. Where's Reyna?
Long story. I was about to launch into the short version of that long story when Hazel Levesque materialized on a horse right next to me, which was an excellent way of testing whether my heart still worked properly.
What's going on?
Hazel asked. Apollo, your face.
I know, I sighed.
Her immortal steed, the lightning-fast Arion, gave me the side eye and nickered as if to say, this fool ain't no Apollo.
Good to see you too, cuz, I grumbled.
I told them all in brief what had happened, with Meg occasionally adding helpful comments like,
he was stupid,
and he was more stupid,
and he did good, then he got stupid again.
When Hazel heard about our encounter in the Target parking lot, she gritted her teeth.
Lavinia, that girl, I swear, if anything happens to Reyna.
Let's focus on what we can control, Frank said, though he looked shaken that Reyna wouldn't be coming back to help. Apollo, we'll buy you as much time as possible for your summoning. Terminus is doing what he can to slow the Emperors down. Right now, I've got ballistae and catapults targeting the Myrmecas. If we can't bring them down, we'll never stop the advance.
Hazel grimaced. The first through fourth cohorts are spread pretty thin across these hills. Arion and I have been zipping back and forth between them as needed, but... She stopped herself from stating the obvious. We're losing ground. Frank, if you can spare me for a minute, I'll get Apollo and Meg to Temple Hill. Ella and Tyson are waiting.
Go.
Wait, I said. Not that I wasn't super anxious to summon a god with a jelly jar, but something Hazel said had made me uneasy. If the first through fourth cohorts are here, where's the fifth?
Guarding New Realm, said Hazel. Dakota's with them. At the moment, thank the gods, the city is secure. No sign of Tarquin.
Pop! Right next to me appeared a marble bust of Terminus, dressed in a World War I British army cap and khaki greatcoat that covered him to the foot of his pedestal. With his loose sleeves, he might have been a double amputee from the trenches of the Somme. Unfortunately, I'd met more than a few of those in the Great War.
The city is not secure, he announced. Tarquin is attacking.
What? Hazel looked personally offended. From where?
Underneath.
The sewers, Hazel cursed. But how? Tarquin built the original Cloaca Maxima of Rome, I reminded her. He knows sewers. I remembered that. I sealed the exits myself.
Well, somehow he unsealed them, Terminus said. The fifth cohort needs help, immediately.
Hazel wavered, clearly rattled by Tarquin outfoxing her.
Go, Frank told her. I'll send the fourth cohort to reinforce you.
Hazel laughed nervously.
And leave you here with only three?
No.
It's fine, Frank said.
Terminus, can you open our defensive barriers here at the main gate? Why would I do that?
We'll try the Wakanda thing.
The what?
You know,
Frank said. We'll funnel the enemy into one location.
Terminus glowered.
I do not recall any Wakanda thing in the Roman military manuals. But very well.
Hazel frowned. Frank, you're not going to do anything stupid.
We'll concentrate our people here and hold the tunnel. I can do this.
He mustered another confident smile.
Good luck, guys. See you on the other side.
Or not, I thought. Frank didn't wait for more protests. He marched off, shouting orders to form up the troops and send the fourth cohort into New Rome. I remembered the hazy images I'd seen from the holographic scroll. Frank ordering his workers around in the Caldecott tunnel, digging and toting urns. I recalled Ella's cryptic words about bridges and fires. I didn't like where those thoughts led me.
Saddle up, kids, Hazel said, offering me a hand.
Arion whinnied indignantly.
Yes, I know, Hazel said. You don't like carrying three. We'll just drop off these two at Temple Hill, and then head straight for the city. There'll be plenty of undead for you to trample, I promise.
That seemed to mollify the horse. I climbed on behind Hazel. Meg took the rumble seat on the horse's rear. I barely had time to hug Hazel's waist before Arion zoomed off, leaving my stomach on the Oakland side of the hills. Chapter 34. Oh, insert name here. Please hear us and fill in blank. What is this, Mad Libs? Tyson and Ella were not good at waiting. We found them at the steps of Jupiter's temple. Ella pacing and wringing her hands, Tyson bouncing up and down in excitement, like a boxer ready for round one. The heavy burlap bags hanging from a belt around Ella's waist swung and clunked together, reminding me of Hephaestus's office desk toy. The one with the ball bearings that bounced against each other. I hated visiting Hephaestus's office. His desk toys were so mesmerizing, I found myself staring at them for hours, sometimes decades. I missed the entire 1480s that way. Tyson's bare chest was now completely covered with tattooed lines of prophecy. When he saw us, he broke into a grin.
Yay! He exclaimed. Zoom pony!
I was not surprised Tyson had dubbed Arion Zoom Pony, or that he seemed happier to see the horse than me. I was surprised that Arion, despite some resentful snorting, allowed the Cyclops to pet his snout. Arion had never struck me as the cuddly type. Then again, Tyson and Arion were both related through Poseidon, which made them brothers of a sort. And you know what? I'm going to stop thinking about this before my brain melts. Ella scuttled over.
Late? Very late. Come on, Apollo. You're late.
I bit back the urge to tell her that we'd had a few things going on. I climbed off Arion's back and waited for Meg. But she stayed on with Hazel.
You don't need me for the summoning thing, Meg said. I'm going to help Hazel and unleash the unicorns.
But...
Godspeed, Hazel told me. Arion vanished, leaving a trail of smoke down the hillside and Tyson patting empty air.
Aww, the Cyclops pouted. Zoom Pony left.
Yes, he does that. I tried to convince myself Meg would be fine. I'd see her soon. The last words I ever heard from her would not be unleash the unicorns. Now, if we're ready?
Late. Later than ready,
Ella complained.
Pick a temple. Yes, need to pick.
I need to...
Single god summoning.
Tyson did his best to roll up his pants leg while hopping over to me on one foot.
Here, I will show you again. It is on my thigh.
That's okay, I told him. I remember. It's just... I scanned the hill. So many temples and shrines. Even more now that the Legion had completed its Jason-inspired building spree. So many statues of gods staring at me. As a member of a pantheon, I had an aversion to picking only one god. That was like picking your favorite child or your favorite musician. If you were capable of picking only one, you were doing something wrong. Also, picking one god meant all the other gods would be mad at me. It didn't matter if they wouldn't have wanted to help me or would have laughed in my face if I'd asked. They would still be offended that I hadn't put them at the top of my list. I knew how they thought. I used to be one of them. Sure, there were some obvious no's. I would not be summoning Juno. I would not bother with Venus, especially since Friday night was her spa night with the three graces. Somnus was a non-starter. He'd answer my call, promise to be right over, and then fall asleep again. I gazed at the giant statue of Jupiter Optimus Maximus, his purple toga rippling like a matador's cape. Come on, he seemed to be telling me. You know you want to. The most powerful of the Olympians. It was well within his power to smite the Emperor's armies, heal my zombie wound, and set everything right at Camp Jupiter, which, after all, was named in his honor. He might even notice all the heroic things I'd done, decide I'd suffered enough, and free me from the punishment of my mortal form. Then again, he might not. Could be he was expecting me to call on him for help. Once I did, he might make the heavens rumble with his laughter and a deep, divine nope. To my surprise, I realized I did not want my godhood back that badly. I didn't even want to live that badly. If Jupiter expected me to crawl to him for help, begging for mercy, he could stick his lightning bolt right up his cloaca maxima. There had only ever been one choice. Deep down, I'd always known which god I had to call. Follow me, I told Ella and Tyson. I ran for the Temple of Diana. Now, I'll admit, I've never been a huge fan of Artemis's Roman persona. As I've said before, I never felt like I personally changed that much during Roman times. I just stayed Apollo. Artemis, though. You know how it is when your sister goes through her moody teenage years? She changes her name to Diana, cuts her hair, hangs out with a different, more hostile set of maiden hunters, starts associating with Hecate and the moon, and basically acts weird. When we first relocated to Rome, the two of us were worshipped together like in the old days. Twin gods with our own temple. But soon Diana went off and did her own thing. We just didn't talk like we used to when we were young and Greek, you know? I was apprehensive about summoning her Roman incarnation, but I needed help. And Artemis, sorry, Diana, was the most likely to respond, even if she would never let me hear the end of it afterward. Besides, I missed her terribly. Yes, I said it. If I was going to die tonight, which seemed increasingly likely, first I wanted to see my sister one last time. Her temple was an outdoor garden, as one might expect from a goddess of the wild. Inside a ring of mature oak trees gleamed a silver pool with a single perpetual geyser burbling in the center. I imagined the place was meant to evoke Diana's old oak grove sanctuary at Lake Nemi, one of the first places where the Romans had worshipped her. At the edge of the pool stood a fire pit stacked with wood, ready for lighting. I wondered if the Legion kept every shrine and temple in such good maintenance, just in case someone got a craving for a last-minute, middle-of-the-night burnt offering.
Apollo should light the fire, Ella said. I will mix ingredients.
I will dance, Tyson announced.
I didn't know whether that was part of the ritual or if he just felt like it, but when a tattooed cyclops decides to launch into an interpretive dance routine, it's best not to ask questions. Ella rummaged in her supply pouches, pulling out herbs, spices, and vials of oils, which made me realize how long it had been since I'd eaten. Why wasn't my stomach growling? I glanced at the blood moon rising over the hilltops. I hoped my next meal would not be brains. I looked around for a torch or a box of matches. Nothing. Then I thought, of course not. I could have the wood pre-stacked for me, but Diana, always the wilderness expert, would expect me to create my own fire. I unslung my bow and pulled out an arrow. I gathered the lightest, driest kindling into a small pile. It had been a long time since I'd made a fire the old mortal way, spinning an arrow in a bowstring to create friction. But I gave it a go. I fumbled half a dozen times, nearly putting my eye out. My archery student Jacob would have been proud. I tried to ignore the sound of explosions in the distance. I spun the arrow until my gut wound felt like it was opening up. My hands became slick with popped blisters. The god of the sun, struggling to make fire. The ironies would never cease. Finally, I succeeded in creating the tiniest of flames. After some desperate cupping, puffing, and praying, the fire was lit. I stood, trembling from exhaustion. Tyson kept dancing to his own internal music, flinging out his arms and spinning like a 300-pound, heavily tattooed Julie Andrews in the Sound of Music remake Quentin Tarantino always wanted to do. I convinced him it was a bad idea. You can thank me later. Ella began sprinkling her proprietary blend of oils, spices, and herbs into the pit. The smoke smelled like a Mediterranean summer feast. It filled me with a sense of peace, reminding me of happier times when we gods were adored by millions of worshippers. You never appreciate a simple pleasure like that until it is taken away. The valley turned quiet, as if I'd stepped back into Harpocrates' sphere of silence. Perhaps it was just a lull in the fighting, but I felt as if all of Camp Jupiter were holding its breath, waiting for me to complete the ritual. With trembling hands, I pulled the Sybil's glass jar from my backpack. "What now?" I asked Ella.
"Tyson,"
Ella said, waving him over.
"That was good dancing. Now show Apollo your armpit."
Tyson lumbered over, grinning and sweaty. He lifted his left arm much closer to my face than I would have liked.
"See?"
"Oh, gods," I recoiled. "Ella, why would you write the summoning ritual in his armpit?"
"That's where it goes," she said.
"It really tickled,"
Tyson laughed.
I will begin.
I tried to focus on the words and not the hairy armpit that they encircled. I tried not to breathe any more than necessary. I will say this, however. Tyson had excellent personal hygiene. Whenever I was forced to inhale, I did not pass out from his body odor, despite his exuberant, sweaty dancing. The only smell I detected was a hint of peanut butter. Why? I did not want to know. "O protector of Rome," I read aloud. "Oh, insert name here."
Ella said. "That's where you..."
I will start again. "O protector of Rome, O Diana, goddess of the hunt, hear our plea and accept our offering." I do not remember all the lines. If I did, I would not record them here for just anyone to use. Summoning Diana with burnt offerings is the very definition of "do not try this at home, kids." Several times I choked up. I was tempted to add personal bits, to let Diana know it wasn't just anyone making a request. This was me. I was special. But I stuck to the armpit script. At the appropriate moment, insert sacrifice here, I dropped the Sybil's jelly jar into the fire. I was afraid it might just sit there heating up, but the glass shattered immediately, releasing a sigh of silver fumes. I hoped I hadn't squandered the soundless god's final breath. I finished the incantation. Tyson mercifully lowered his arm. Ella stared at the fire, then at the sky, her nose twitching anxiously.
"Apollo hesitated," she said. "He didn't read the third line right. He probably messed up. I hope he didn't mess it up."
"Your confidence is heartwarming," I said. But I shared her concern. I saw no signs of divine help in the night sky. The red full moon continued to leer at me, bathing the landscape in bloody light. No hunting horns trumpeted in the distance. Just a fresh round of explosions from the Oakland Hills, and cries of battle from New Rome.
"You messed up,"
Ella decided. Give it time, I said. Gods don't always show up immediately. Once it took me 10 years to answer some prayers from the city of Pompeii, and by the time I got there... Maybe that's not a good example. Ella wrung her hands. Tyson and Ella will wait here in case the goddess shows up. Apollo should go fight stuff.
Aww,
Tyson pouted.
But I want to fight stuff.
Tyson will wait here with Ella, Ella insisted. Apollo, go fight.
I scanned the valley. Several rooftops in New Rome were now on fire. Meg would be fighting in the streets, doing God's knew what with her weaponized unicorns. Hazel would be desperately shoring up the defenses as zombies and ghouls boiled up from the sewers, attacking civilians. They needed help. And it would take me less time to reach New Rome than to get to the Caldecott Tunnel. But just thinking about joining the battle made my stomach flare with pain. I remembered how I'd collapsed in the tyrant's tomb. I would be of little use against Tarquin. Being near him would just accelerate my promotion to Zombie of the Month. I gazed at the Oakland Hills, their silhouettes lit by flickering explosions. The Emperors must be battling Frank's defenders at the Caldecott Tunnel by now. Without Arion or a go-glo bike, I wasn't sure I could make it there in time to do any good, but it seemed like my least horrible option. Charge, I said miserably. I jogged off across the valley. Chapter 35. Such a deal for you. 2-for-1 single combat. Kill us both for free. The most embarrassing thing. As I wheezed and huffed up the hill, I found myself humming Ride of the Valkyries. Curse you, Richard Wagner. Curse you, Apocalypse Now. By the time I reached the summit, I was dizzy and drenched in sweat. I took in the scene below and decided my presence would mean nothing. I was too late. The hills were a scarred wasteland of trenches, shattered armor and broken war machines. 100 yards down Highway 24, the Emperor's troops had formed up in columns. Instead of thousands, there were now a few hundred. A combination of Germanus bodyguards, Cro-Mandi, Pandai, and other humanoid tribes. One small mercy, no Myrmecas remained. Frank's strategy of targeting the giant ants had apparently worked. At the entrance to the Caldecott Tunnel, directly beneath me, waited the remnants of the 12th Legion. A dozen ragged demigods formed a shield wall across the inbound lanes. A young woman I didn't recognize held the Legion standard, which could only mean that Jacob had either been killed or gravely wounded. The overheated gold eagle smoked so badly I couldn't make out its form. It wouldn't be zapping any more enemies today. Hannibal the elephant stood with the troops in his Kevlar armor, his trunk and legs bleeding from dozens of cuts. In front of the line towered an 8-foot-tall Kodiak bear. Frank Zhang, I assumed. 3 arrows bristled in his shoulder, but his claws were out and ready for more battle. My heart twisted. Perhaps as a large bear, Frank could survive with a few arrows stuck in him. But what would happen when he tried to turn human again? As for the other survivors, I simply couldn't believe they were all that remained of 3 cohorts. Maybe the missing ones were wounded rather than dead. Perhaps I should have taken comfort in the possibility that, for every legionnaire who had fallen, hundreds of enemies had been destroyed. But they looked so tragic, so hopelessly outnumbered, guarding the entrance to Camp Jupiter. I lifted my gaze beyond the highway, out to the bay, and lost all hope. The Emperor's fleet was still in position, a string of floating white palaces ready to rain destruction upon us, then host a massive victory celebration. Even if we somehow managed to destroy all the enemies remaining on Highway 24, those yachts were beyond our reach. Whatever Lavinia had been planning, she had apparently failed. With a single order, the Emperors could lay waste to the entire camp. The clop of hooves and rattle of wheels drew my attention back to the enemy lines. Their columns parted. The Emperors themselves came out to parley, standing side by side in a golden chariot. Commodus and Caligula looked like they'd had a competition to pick the gaudiest armor, and both of them had lost. They were clad head to toe in imperial gold. Greaves, kilts, breastplates, gloves, helmets, all with elaborate gorgon and fury designs, encrusted with precious gems. Their faceplates were fashioned like grimacing demons. I could only tell the two emperors apart because Commodus was taller and broader in the shoulders. Pulling the chariot were two white horses. No, not horses. Their backs carried long, ugly scars on either side of their spines. Their withers were scored with lash marks. Their handlers slash torturers walked beside them, gripping their reins and keeping cattle prods ready in case the beasts got any ideas. Oh, gods. I fell to my knees and retched. Of all the horrors I had seen, this struck me as the worst of all. Those once beautiful steeds were Pegasi. What kind of monster would cut off the wings of a Pegasus? The emperors obviously wanted to send a message. They intended to dominate the world at any cost. They would stop at nothing. They would mutilate and maim. They would waste and destroy. Nothing was sacred except their own power. I rose unsteadily. My hopelessness turned into boiling anger. I howled. No! My cry echoed through the ravine. The Emperor's retinue clattered to a stop. Hundreds of faces turned upward, trying to pinpoint the source of the noise. I clambered down the hill, lost my footing, somersaulted, banged into a tree, staggered to my feet, and kept going. No one tried to shoot me. No one yelled, "Hooray, we're saved!" Frank's defenders and the Emperor's troops simply watched, dumbstruck as I made my way downhill. A single beat-up teenager in tattered clothes and mud-caked shoes, with a ukulele and a bow on my back. It was, I suspected, the least impressive arrival of reinforcements in history. At last I reached the Legionnaires on the highway. Caligula studied me from across 50 feet of asphalt. He burst out laughing. Hesitantly, his troops followed his example, except for the Germani, who rarely laughed. Commodus shifted in his golden armor.
"Excuse me, could someone caption this scene for me? What's going on?"
Only then did I realize Commodus's eyesight had not recovered as well as he'd hoped. Probably, I thought with bitter satisfaction, my blinding flash of divine radiance at the waystation had left him able to see a little bit in full daylight, but not at all at night. A small blessing, if I could figure out how to use it.
"I wish I could describe it," Caligula said dryly. "The mighty god Apollo has come to the rescue, and he's never looked better."
"That was sarcasm," Commodus asked. "Does he look horrible?"
"Yes,"
Caligula said.
"Ha!" Commodus forced a laugh. "Ha! Apollo, you look horrible."
My hands trembling, I knocked an arrow and fired it at Caligula's face. My aim was true, but Caligula swatted aside the projectile like it was a sleepy horsefly.
"Don't embarrass yourself, Lester," he said. "Let the leaders talk."
He turned his grimacing face mask toward the Kodiak bear.
Well, Frank Zheng, you have a chance to surrender with honor. Bow to your emperor.
Emperors, Commodus corrected.
Yes, of course, Caligula said smoothly. Praetor Zheng, you are duty-bound to recognize Roman authority, and we are it. Together we can rebuild this camp and raise your legion to glory. No more hiding, no more cowering behind Terminus's weak boundaries. It is time to be true Romans and conquer the world. Join us. Learn from Jason Grace's mistake. I howled again. This time I launched an arrow at Commodus. Yes, it was petty. I thought I could hit a blind emperor more easily. But he too swatted the arrow away.
Cheap shot, Apollo, he yelled. There's nothing wrong with my hearing or my reflexes.
The Kodiak bear bellowed. With one claw, he broke the arrow shafts in his shoulder. He shrank, changing into Frank Zheng. The arrow stubs pierced his breastplate at the shoulder. He'd lost his helmet. The side of his body was soaked in blood, but his expression was pure determination. Next to him, Hannibal trumpeted and pawed the pavement, ready to charge.
No, buddy.
Frank glanced at his last dozen comrades, weary and wounded, but still ready to follow him to the death.
Enough blood has been shed.
Caligula inclined his head in agreement. So, you yield, then?
Oh, no.
Frank straightened, though the effort made him wince.
I have an alternative solution. Spolia opima.
Nervous murmurs rippled through the emperor's columns. Some of the Germani raised their bushy eyebrows. A few of Frank's legionnaires looked like they wanted to say something. Are you crazy? For instance, but they held their tongues. Commodus laughed. He pulled off his helmet, revealing his shaggy curls and beard, his cruel, handsome face. His gaze was milky and unfocused, the skin around his eyes still pitted as if he'd been splashed with acid.
Single combat, he grinned. I love this idea.
I'll take you both, Frank offered. You and Caligula against me. You win and make it through the tunnel, the camp is yours. Commodus rubbed his hands.
Glorious!
Wait,
Caligula snapped. He removed his own helmet. He did not look delighted. His eyes glittered, his mind no doubt racing as he thought over all the angles.
This is too good to be true. What are you playing at, Zheng?
Either I kill you or I die, Frank said. That's all. Get through me and you can march right into camp. I'll order my remaining troops to stand down. You can have your triumphal parade through New Rome like you've always wanted.
Frank turned to one of his comrades.
You hear that column? Those are my orders. If I die, you will make sure they are honored.
Column opened his mouth, but apparently didn't trust himself to speak. He just nodded dourly. Caligula frowned.
Spolia opima.
It's so primitive. It hasn't been done since. He stopped himself, perhaps remembering the kind of troops he had at his back. Primitive Germani, who viewed single combat as the most honorable way for a leader to win a battle. In earlier times, Romans had felt the same way. The first king, Romulus, had personally defeated an enemy king, Acron, stripping him of his armor and weapons. For centuries after, Roman generals tried to emulate Romulus, going out of their way to find enemy leaders on the battlefield for single combat, so they could claim spolia opima, It was the ultimate display of courage for any true Roman. Frank's ploy was clever. The emperors couldn't refuse his challenge without losing face in front of their troops. On the other hand, Frank was badly wounded. He couldn't possibly win without help.
Two against two,
I yelped, surprising even myself.
I'll fight.
That got another round of laughter from the emperor's troops. Commodus said,
even better.
Frank looked horror-stricken, which wasn't the sort of thank you I'd been hoping for.
Apollo, no, he said. I can handle this. Clear off.
A few months ago, I would have been happy to let Frank take this hopeless fight on his own while I sat back, ate chilled grapes, and checked my messages. Not now. Not after Jason Grace. I glanced at the poor maimed Pegasi chained to the Emperor's chariot, and I decided I couldn't live in a world where cruelty like that went unchallenged.
Sorry, Frank, I said. You won't face this alone.
I looked at Caligula. Well, baby booties, your colleague emperor has already agreed. Are you in, or do we terrify you too much?
Caligula's nostrils flared. We have lived for thousands of years, he said, as if explaining a simple fact to a slow student. We are gods.
And I'm the son of Mars, Frank countered. Praetor of the 12th Legion Fulminata. I'm not afraid to die. Are you?
The emperor stayed silent for a count of five. Finally, Caligula called over his shoulder.
Gregorix!
One of the Germani jogged forward. With his massive height and weight, his shaggy hair and beard, and his thick hide armor, he looked like Frank in Kodiak bear form, only with an uglier face.
Lord, he grunted.
The troops are to stay where they are, Caligula ordered. No interference while Commodus and I kill Praetor Zhang and his pet god. Understood?
Gregorix studied me. I could imagine him silently wrestling with his ideas of honor. Single combat was good. Single combat against a wounded warrior and a zombie-infected weakling, however, was not much of a victory. The smart thing would be to slaughter all of us and march on into the camp. But a challenge had been issued. Challenges had to be accepted. But his job was to protect the emperors, and if this was some sort of trap, I bet Gregorix was wishing he'd pursued that business degree his mom always wanted him to get. Being a barbarian bodyguard was mentally exhausting.
Very well, my lord,
he said. Frank faced his remaining troops.
Get out of here. Find Hazel. Defend the city from Tarquin.
Hannibal trumpeted in protest.
You too, buddy, Frank said. No elephants are going to die today.
Hannibal huffed. The demigods obviously didn't like it either, but they were Roman legionnaires, too well trained to disobey a direct order. They retreated into the tunnel with the elephant and the legion standard, leaving only Frank Zhang and me on Team Camp Jupiter. While the emperors climbed down from their chariot, Frank turned to me and wrapped me in a sweaty, bloody embrace. I'd always figured him for a hugger, so this didn't surprise me, until he whispered in my ear,
"You're interfering with my plan. When I say time's up, I don't care where you are or how the fight is going. I want you to run away from me as fast as you can. That's an order."
He clapped me on my back and let me go. I wanted to protest. You're not the boss of me. I hadn't come here to run away on command. I could do that quite well on my own. I certainly wasn't going to allow another friend to sacrifice himself for my sake.
On the other hand, I didn't know Frank's plan. I'd have to wait and see what he had in mind. Then I could decide what to do. Besides, if we stood any chance of winning a death match against Commodus and Caligula, it wouldn't be on account of our superior strength and charming personalities. We needed some serious industrial strength cheating. The Emperor strode toward us across the scorched and buckled asphalt. Up close, their armor was even more hideous. Caligula's breastplate looked like it had been coated with glue, then rolled through the display cases at Tiffany & Company.
Well, he gave us a smile as bright and cold as his jewel collection. Shall we?
Commodus took off his gauntlets. His hands were huge and rough, calloused as if he'd been punching brick walls in his spare time. It was hard to believe I had ever held those hands with affection.
Caligula, you take Zhang, he said. I'll take Apollo. I don't need my eyesight to find him. I'll just follow my ears. He'll be the one whimpering.
I hated that he knew me so well.
Frank drew his sword. Blood still oozed from his shoulder wounds. I wasn't sure how he planned to remain standing, much less do battle. His other hand brushed the cloth pouch that held his piece of firewood.
So we're clear on the rules, he said. There aren't any. We kill you, you die.
Then he gestured at the Emperor's. Come and get it.
Chapter 36. Not again. My heart. How many syllables is total hopelessness? Even in my weakened condition, you'd think I would be able to stay out of reach of a blind opponent. You'd be wrong. Commodus was only 10 yards away when I shot my next arrow at him. Somehow he dodged it, rushed in, and yanked the bow out of my hands. He broke the weapon over his knee.
Rude!
I yelled. In retrospect, that was not the way I should have spent that millisecond. Commodus punched me square in the chest. I staggered backward and collapsed on my butt, my lungs on fire, my sternum throbbing. A hit like that should have killed me. I wondered if my godly strength had decided to make a cameo appearance. If so, I squandered the opportunity to strike back. I was too busy crawling away, crying in pain. Commodus laughed, turning to his troops.
You see? He's always the one whimpering.
His followers cheered. Commodus wasted valuable time basking in their adulation. He couldn't help being a showman. He also must have known I wasn't going anywhere. I glanced at Frank. He and Caligula circled each other, occasionally trading blows, testing each other's defenses. With the arrowheads in his shoulder, Frank had no choice but to favor his left side. He moved stiffly, leaving a trail of bloody footprints on the asphalt that reminded me, quite inappropriately, of a ballroom dancing diagram Fred Astaire had once given me. Caligula prowled around him, supremely confident. He wore the same self-satisfied smile he'd had when he impaled Jason Grace in the back. For weeks, I'd had nightmares about that smile. I shook myself out of my stupor. I was supposed to be doing something. Not dying. Yes, that was at the top of my to-do list. I managed to get up. I fumbled for my sword, then remembered I didn't have one. My only weapon now was my ukulele. Playing a song for an enemy who was hunting me by sound did not seem like the wisest move, but I grabbed the uke by the fretboard. Commodus must have heard the strings twang. He turned and drew his sword. For a big man in blinged-out armor, he moved much too fast. Before I could even decide which Dean Martin number to play for him, he jabbed at me, nearly opening up my belly,
The point of his blade sparked against the bronze body of the ukulele. With both hands, he raised his sword overhead to cleave me in two. I lunged forward and poked him in the gut with my instrument. Ha ha! There were two problems with this. One, his gut was covered in armor, and two, the ukulele had a rounded bottom. I made a mental note that if I survived this battle, I would design a version with spikes at the base, and perhaps a flamethrower, the Gene Simmons ukulele. Commodus's counterstrike would have killed me if he hadn't been laughing so hard. I leaped aside as his sword hurtled down, sinking into the spot where I'd been standing. One good thing about battling on a highway, all those explosions and lightning strikes had made the asphalt soft. While Commodus tried to tug his sword free, I charged and slammed into him. To my surprise, I actually managed to shove him off balance. He stumbled and landed on his armor-plated rear, leaving his sword quivering in the pavement. Nobody in the Emperor's army cheered for me. Tough crowd. I took a step back, trying to catch my breath. Someone pressed against my back. I yelped, terrified that Caligula was about to spear me. But it was only Frank. Caligula stood about 20 feet away from him, cursing as he wiped bits of gravel from his eyes. "Remember what I said," Frank told me.
"Why are you doing this?"
I wheezed.
"It's the only way. If we're lucky, we're buying time."
"Buying time?"
"For godly help to arrive. That's still happening, right?"
I gulped. "Maybe?"
"Apollo, please tell me you did the summoning ritual."
"I did."
"Then we're buying time," Frank insisted.
"And if help doesn't arrive?"
"Then you'll have to trust me. Do what I told you. On my cue, get out of the tunnel."
I wasn't sure what he meant. We weren't in the tunnel. But our chat time had ended. Commodus and Caligula closed in on us simultaneously.
"Gravel in the eyes, Zhang," Caligula snarled. "Really?"
Their blades crossed as Caligula pushed Frank toward the mouth of the Caldecott tunnel. Or was Frank letting himself be pushed? The clang of metal against metal echoed through the empty passageway. Commodus tugged his own sword free of the asphalt.
"All right, Apollo. This has been fun. But you need to die now."
He howled and charged, his voice booming back at him from the depths of the tunnel. Echoes, I thought. I ran for the Caldecott. Echoes can be confusing for people who depend on their hearing. Inside the shaft, I might have more luck avoiding Commodus. Yes, that was my strategy. I wasn't simply panicking and running for my life. Entering the tunnel was a perfectly level-headed, well-reasoned plan that just happened to involve me screaming and fleeing. I turned before Commodus overtook me. I swung my ukulele, intending to imprint its soundboard on his face, but Commodus anticipated my move. He yanked the instrument out of my hands. I stumbled away from him, and Commodus committed the most heinous of crimes. With one huge fist, he crumpled my ukulele like an aluminum can and tossed it aside.
"Heresy!"
I roared. A reckless, terrible anger possessed me. I challenge you to feel differently when you've just watched someone destroy your ukulele. It would render any person insensible with rage. My first punch left a fist-sized crater in the Emperor's gold breastplate. "Oh," I thought in some distant corner of my mind. "Hello, godly strength." Off balance, Commodus slashed wildly. I blocked his arm and punched him in the nose, causing a brittle squish that I found delightfully disgusting. He yowled, blood streaming through his mustache.
You dare strike me? I kill you!
You won't kill me, I shouted back. I have my strength back.
Ha!
Commodus cried.
I never lost mine. And I'm still bigger!
I hate it when megalomaniac villains make valid points. He barreled toward me. I ducked underneath his arm and kicked him in the back, propelling him into a guardrail on the side of the tunnel. His forehead hit the metal with a dainty sound, like a triangle. Ding! That should have made me feel quite satisfied. Except my ruined ukulele-inspired rage was ebbing, and with it my burst of divine strength. I could feel the zombie poison creeping through my capillaries, wriggling and burning its way into every part of my body. My gut wound seemed to be unraveling, about to spill my stuffing everywhere like a raggedy Olympian Pooh Bear. Also, I was suddenly aware of the many large, unmarked crates stacked along one side of the tunnel, taking up the entire length of the raised pedestrian walkway. Along the other side of the tunnel, the shoulder of the road was torn up and lined with orange traffic barrels. Not unusual in themselves, but it struck me that they were just about the right size to contain the urns I'd seen Frank's workers carrying during our holographic scroll call. In addition, every 5 feet or so, a thin groove had been cut across the width of the asphalt. Again, not unusual in itself, the highway department could have just been doing some repaving work.